This is the Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Mizzou Sports Podcast. My name is Eric Blum, breaking down Mizzou sports with you every week here on the show. This is our Thanksgiving spectacular, if you will. Joining me as always is Tribune reporter Langston Newsom. How are you doing, Langston?
Absolutely fantastic, and so excited to be in Thanksgiving week, my favorite holiday of the year.
Is it really?
Yep. It's birthday's right around it, so it's always like you have family together, then it's presents for my birthday. It's a great time.
Fair enough. It's one of my favorites, too. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. We actually have kind of a jam-packed episode this week. I know we always make the joke it goes long, but we really do have a jam-packed episode this week. Not one, but actually two guests. Usually we go long with one. We went kind of shorter with two. First up is Konzo Martin. I talked to him actually last Friday. Great job talking to him. It was a great time talking to him. And then obviously big news on the Mizzou football front this week is Mizzou Arkansas is off. It is now Mizzou Vanderbilt. So the Barry Odom talk from Langston's going to have to wait until we don't know when, because I make the point talking to Adam, and it's true. You look at Mizzou's future schedule, and it's really now the shrug emoji. We hope Mississippi State is going to open next week, but we really don't know. So I don't want to waste any of your time. We can talk about more basketball coming out of it, but before further ado, I know you guys want to hear from Konzo. Here is my interview with Missouri head men's basketball coach Konzo Martin.
Joining the Mizzou Sports Podcast this time is Mizzou's head men's basketball coach, Konzo Martin. How are you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great, Eric. How are you doing?
Good, good. Full disclosure, we're recording this on Friday, November 20th, about 5 days out from Mizzou men's basketball season opener. Does it feel like it's December 20th a little bit to you? Does it feel like Christmas morning you're this close to a season opener?
I'm excited to play. It seems like we've been waiting for a while. I mean, we had a pause in mid-March, and we didn't really get together June and July, so now we're at it. So I'm excited to get started. But this is always a fun time a year for me, the holiday season, and you're playing basketball.
If you don't mind, let me take you back, I guess, 8 months to that time in Nashville. I mean, I know the team was just starting to come together, and then unfortunately something that was really out of your control happened. I mean, what was going through your mind kind of when everything kind of went down? And, you know, does it make it even more sweet to get back on the court now?
I mean, it's sweet to get back on the court. Grateful to be on the court, because it's one of those deals where you can't take anything for granted. And at that time, it was just you didn't know. It wasn't as if, at least I didn't know, think, okay, 8 months this could take place and we could be out 3 straight months, 4 months. I didn't see that, because there were so many unknowns. And we have such a great country when it comes to medicines and that sort of thing. We felt like we could regroup quickly, but that wasn't the case. And then after that, we'll just, if we have to deal with it, let's make the best of it. So we spent a lot of time with our team doing Zoom calls, talking about a lot of life things. And then I was able to spend a lot of quality time with my family. So that was great.
Is there anything in particular you got done because of quarantine that you wouldn't have got done if you were just in your normal routine?
One subtle thing, but a big thing for me, I got a peace of mind. You know, I just got a chance to sit down, because I've been doing this since 2000, really since I left home at 18 years old, just been going. And when I got in this profession in 2000 as an assistant, just been nonstop. So this was probably the first time I had a chance to really slow down, gain a peace of mind, and then regroup and continue to push forward.
How nice was that, just in general, a peace of mind or whatever? I know you love coaching, you love the game of basketball. Just how nice was that in general, just maybe just taking a little bit of a pause and a break and just breathe a little bit?
I think it was one of the greatest experiences for me in the last 20 years. I can certainly say that, just to sit back and not have to deal with the hustle and bustle of what's tomorrow. Have to get up and you're waking up anywhere between 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. every morning, that, you know, just you know, sleepless nights, trying to think of the next thing to help make you better, help make your program better. And in the process, when you're doing all that, the thing that you oftentimes neglect is the value of family and spending quality time with your family and really being present with your family, not so much as you're in the household, but just to be mentally and physically present. And I think I would give myself a C-minus in that department. So grateful to I look at it as God allowed me to slow down and reassess and reevaluate and now regroup and push forward.
We're still in the middle of a pandemic. As you get back on the floor now, as a leader, as you know, the guy who's guiding young men, and I think you put a lot of emphasis on, you know, off-court stuff, just in, you know, and helping out your team much as on-court stuff, do you take pride in either checking with the news or being aware of everything going around because of this health pandemic, or just guiding them through that part of this experience as well?
Oh, yes. We talk through a lot of that stuff. Now, I'm not consumed with watching the news because there's a lot that I don't enjoy watching. But when you're talking about COVID, you have to be aware of your surroundings when you're dealing with that. The racial injustices that were taking place in our society, that has been taking place in our society, we talk about that. Outside of that, I don't really get consumed with it because my job is to prepare these guys on the basketball court, off the court, and hopefully that'll help them in life because we're not just basketball coaches. We have a job to do in the development of young men, that continued growth, and that's important. You know, just that dedication to living life, being successful, that dedication not just to go to class but to be a successful student, to be a scholar. The ability to listen and apply, and listen with the information in the classroom and apply that information in your everyday life. Because I go back to myself, there was a lot of classes I took in college, and I can't remember a lot about those classes. So what I try to tell our guys, try to gain information in that classroom. Pay attention to details. Always have a work ethic. These things, they matter. You have to be a fighter. You have to be a warrior in life because things don't always go your way, and life can be tough at times. So you're just dealing with a lot of different things. And then hopefully they can become successful men, and in the process, if they choose to be fathers and husbands.
That sounds great, Coach. Just, I guess, more on a lighter note now, let's talk about some actually on-court stuff. Just what exactly do you like about this year's team?
Well, I like the guys. You know, I like the guys. I always, in most cases, there might have been one or two, but I always enjoy coaching guys, being around guys. I more than anything, I enjoy practicing, and I enjoy the games. I enjoy those two because you practice, you prepare. But if there's anything I would enjoy, it's practice because you compete. You let your hair down, you're playing, you're getting better, the ups and downs of practice. I enjoy that. I enjoy seeing young men growing and develop. Not only their basketball skills, but their social skills, their ability to communicate when they come in as an 18-year-old and they leave us as men. I enjoy that process. I enjoy that these guys, they want to win. They want to win, and they're learning how to compete. And I know that you might say, well, what do you mean compete? They should always compete as basketball, but it's not necessarily the case. Some play the game. Some enjoy playing the game. Some play hard, but we have to have a collection of guys that compete, and I think that's the separation from good to great.
Just out of curiosity, how do you differentiate between Drew Smith and Drew Bugs? Do you call them both Drew, call one of them Bugs, one of them Smith, but then there's three Smiths on the team. So how do you differentiate between the two of them?
Well, obviously, Drew Smith, I just call him Drew because he was here first, and I'm used to saying that. Then Bugs, we just call him Bugs. Then obviously Mitch is Mitch, and Mark is Mark.
Okay, fair enough. I guess I'm curious to ask you about Drew Bugs because last year very rare occasions Mark Smith played the point, but for a heavy majority of the season it was either Xavier Pinson or Drew Smith. You know, with Drew Bugs coming in with his, I assume because he set the Hawaii all-time record for assists in the middle of last season, he's someone that might get some looks at the point guard spot. How do you kind of assume that role on the guy who's going to be the primarily ball handler for the team?
Oh, well, he'll be there. X will be there. Drew Smith will be there. All three of those guys will be there. That's not a problem. It's just who's on the floor. And I think in most cases, like, for example, if Drew Bugs and Drew Smith on the floor, then Drew Buzz will be the point guard. You know, but both of them bring it up. If Drew Buzz, X Pinson on the floor, Drew Buzz would probably be the point guard because X is more of a scorer, so you put him in positions to score where he doesn't have to have the pressures of bringing it up, not looking to score. So, yeah, that's not a big deal at all.
It does seem like a good problem to have that you have a few positions. Just, I mean, when you think about the guys who come back, you also have Jeremiah Tillman, you have, you know, a Javon Pickett, even a Torrance Watson who maybe aren't getting as many headlines or whatever. But, you know, and I'm sure I could list more, but I'd probably be missing someone. Just, I feel like this is the most depth you've had in Columbia so far.
Well, I think the first year. I mean, I think you had good depth, but that was just unknowns because we were coming together. But I think that first year, now you're getting you Michael Porter Jr. He's healthy. That's an elite talent. Now if you see what Jonte Porter, Cassius, Jeremiah Tillman, so Kevin Purse. Yeah, you had talent. There were just so many unknowns with the other parts. I guess about the first year and this year, very similar. But again, when you have a Michael Porter, Jonte, then you have to really put Cassius in that category because of what he came in and accomplished. Then I forgot about Jordan Barnett. You know, you got Jordan Geist was feisty. So, man, that first year they had, yeah, they had some parts. I mean, those guys, and they played with a chip on their shoulder. And then I think they were fighting the unknown of trying to get out of a situation. And they did a great job. This team has to prove it.
I know better than to ask you about any of the preseason rankings or anything like that. You know, but
go ahead,
in general. What'd you say, Coach?
You can ask me. That's fine. Go ahead and ask.
Okay. If you're going to drop that carrot, does 10th feel right for the amount of talent you have in Columbia?
Yes, that's what they picked us as. So, again, you have to prove it. I mean, I think that's the best way to do it. You have to prove it. I mean, so obviously somebody doesn't think we have talent. So it's our job to prove it.
Fair enough, and I'll come clean to you with the USA Today Network. I picked 6th, so obviously, and we had somebody who picked you 13th. So I don't know who that person was. So obviously, something. There's a wide range, I'll say, of where you might could end up this season. But obviously, you could end up anywhere 1 through 14. That's obvious. But anyway, all I was going to say was going forward, I think you have 88% of your minutes played returning, 82% of your scoring. In a pandemic year, do you think that matters more maybe than usual when there hasn't been too much time? You spent a lot of time over Zoom together. And there's a lot of guys who know you already, know your systems, know how you like things done that are already in Columbia.
I think that's helpful. Now, I'm not sure how other teams might have spent a lot of time. We just didn't come back in June and July. I know a lot of other teams did. We didn't. I just felt like it was important that we respect this disease or this virus. Just try our best to stay out of harm's way. But, again, I think you have experience, and I said this before, but you have to prove it. I think it's simply that. You have to play with a chip on your shoulder. You have to have an edge. I know how I would feel. I was a ball player. I felt like we had, you know, a good team, good talent, and I want to go out and prove it.
Sounds good. I don't want to take up too much more of your time, Coach. But overall looking at this season – I guess I'll ask you about this one particular thing. When you saw that you guys were hosting bragging rights, you're from St. Louis. I know how much that game kind of means to you to have it at the Enterprise Center or at formerly the Checker Dome, Scott Trade Center, now the Enterprise Center. What does it mean to you have that game and likely to be probably a top 10 team in Illinois coming to campus on December 12th?
I think it's great, man. I mean, they're a talented team. Brad has done a tremendous job, obviously, coaching his team. They had a great shot down the stretch to win the Big Ten last year. Io is as good as any guard in America. I mean, that goes without saying, an elite scorer. They have great bigs. Trent Frazier is a dangerous, dangerous player with the way he shoots the ball, his toughness, and they got great young talent coming in. And man, they're a talented team. Man, you got to give credit where it's due, but that's what that game should be. It should be a high-level game, and I'm hopeful that we can go to each other's place every now and then, as well as in St. Louis. It'll be great.
Gotcha. And one thing about, I think, my ballot, preseason ballot, was Drew Smith obviously got second team for the coaches and the media, and that's obviously deserved. But I put Jeremiah Tillman on there, and I think that maybe because of his injuries of the past, you know, 2 years, maybe he hasn't shown the conference what that he can do on that level. What do you expect from Jeremiah for his senior year?
expect great things from him. I just think, and I think what happens in his case, I think big guys somehow get overlooked, and I think that's just been the game the past 6 or 7, 8 years. But he'll do what he needs to do to be successful because he's a competitive basketball player. And then I'm hopeful that it has not only a chip but a bold on his shoulder to go out and play.
All right, one final question for you on a lighter note here, Konzo, and thank you for taking the time to join us. Is there an exact way you like your coffee? Do you drink it black? Do you drink it with cream and sugar? Is there a place you usually go to? Or I bought a Keurig a couple weeks ago. Actually, my father bought it for me. It's been life-changing. But so what is your morning coffee routine? I'm just curious.
No, outside of at home or in the office, I most cases I go to Dunkin' Donut. I got a great relationship with the morning team at Dunkin' Donut. Wonderful people. I mean, I hit other spots in town too. The Colas, I hit Starbucks, but if I had to feel like a team outside of the team, I would say Dunkin'. They take great care of me. Not that they give me anything like that. It's just they're good people. I like them. I like the Dunkin' Donut morning team.
All right. Well, that was Konzo Martin, head coach of the Missouri men's basketball. Their season opener is November 25th. It should be tomorrow based on when this will be released against Oral Roberts. Coach Bennett, thanks so much for taking the time to join us, and best of luck to the season.
All right, Eric. Take care, man.
Yeah, bye.
And thank you once again to Konzo Martin for joining us on this week's Mizzou Sports Podcast. Mizzou does actually open the season, as we mentioned there, on this will be tomorrow because we're recording this on a Tuesday because of Thanksgiving week. They open tomorrow, November 25th, at home against Oral Roberts. The women open up Friday against North Alabama. And we'll see how coronavirus protocols go inside Mizzou Arena. I know there's no media meal this year, no in-person press conferences. I mean, essentially, we're just going to have to go up through the media, not even the traditional media entrance, through the player entrance. But they go down to the elevators. We just go down through the concourse. And football, you feel safe, but basketball, we'll see how it goes, you know, everything like that. But kind of going into the basketball season before we get into all the football talk, you know, now that we're a day away from Mizzou starting, how do you feel, Langston? Where do you think things lie with either program?
I think it's full of intrigue. You've got experience coming back on the men's side. You've got a plethora of guards that you can potentially play at point guard, which is a decision that is going to have to be made early for this team, something you highlighted in the story earlier this week. And then on the women's side, it's all about, you know, those talented freshmen a year ago in Asia Blackwell and Haley Frank taking that next step as sophomores and kind of carrying this team past. They were picked 10th in the preseason poll. They were picked 10th, to finish 10th in the SEC. I think they're a little bit better than that on the women's side. So excited to see what Haley Frank and Asia Blackwell could do this year.
For sure, yeah. You know, it's interesting just because of just the mix of different people that are coming in for each of these teams. I mean, Mizzou, the mix was more so in Columbia because you bring back 88% of your minutes, 82% of your scoring. On the women's side, you bring back the biggest young faces, but it's just moving pieces around them. And one thing that I think that people always should look at on the women's side is Robin basically gets her second mulligan season in a row. You didn't realize how much Sophie made up for until you removed her. I mean, you put Sophie in the middle of that team last year, they're probably an NCAA tournament team. I hate to say it, you know, with an Asia Blackwell, and you have someone who could score off of her like that. Maybe one post player away from being a really good team because there is no Sierra Porter on that team. But you take her out, and they're 11th in the conference and have to, you know, get the play-in round of the SEC tournament. It was always going to be that kind of effect. So now that it's the first season where you know to expect post-Sophie, 2 years after Sophie, you know, and with everything going on in the coronavirus pandemic, this is a great year for the women to just kind of just not rebuild, but reload, I think is a better word for them, just to really have everything in order so a junior Haley and Asia can vault up the top of the conference. I don't think anyone in their brightest ideas thinks Missouri's in a spot to challenge a South Carolina, Mississippi State, a Kentucky right now, a Tennessee right now. No, they're not there. Those are teams who can host and being a top 4 seed in the NCAA Women's Tournament. Mizzou didn't even get there with Sophie.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's important to keep in mind, because even with Sophie Cunningham at the top of her powers, you had Lauren Aldridge, you had Sierra Porter, that team was still struggling to kind of reach the top against Mississippi State. I know that Missouri did beat Mississippi State, I believe, on the road.
They did.
On Sophie's senior year, but when it came time in the SEC tournament, it was kind of a different story, a much different game, lopsided loss in the SEC tournament to Mississippi State. And so to expect, when you lose that depth of talent, to kind of just turn around and still be the same program 1 to 2 years later, even if you're replenishing that with another top 25 recruit like Asia Blackwell, it's just not going to happen that quickly. So, yeah, I like how you put that there. So this is a year to reload and really see that progress for next year and the year after the junior-senior seasons for Asia Blackwell. She can take that next step and be a potential first-team All-SEC player.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that, and we'll talk more about the women going forward. Hopefully have some guests on that from that side of things. But going on the men side for a little while now, because obviously you just heard from Konzo, the one thing that he kind of said that left me with is just how much of a toll, not a toll, but how much of just, I'll go back to it, how much of a toll that just the life of college basketball took, and how much he needed a chance to just refresh after really, by his estimation, I mean, I'm not trying to put an age on Konzo, but he kind of said it himself, and it's all on Wikipedia. But, you know, how much, even since he left to go to Purdue in the early 90s, how much his life has just been nonstop basketball, basketball, basketball. He had 4 years at Purdue where they went, I think, to the NCAA tournament all 4 years. It's a long season. Then 4 years playing professionally. He had one season as a high school coach, and then he was on Gene Katie's staff and then Matt Painter's staff at Purdue. Then he was a head coach the rest of that time. That's been his life since he's been 18. So it was kind of the first chance for him just to breathe, relax, and regroup and recharge, and now he's back. How much of just the regroup and recharge matters for a Konzo Martin going forward? I think it'll be a really interesting story, and that's why it was my centerpiece. Pick it up and tomorrow's Tribune as our Mizzou men's basketball centerpiece. Just really a story on Konzo about how much he needed that. And it was kind of an underrated thing, I think, going forward, of just, you look at kind of the mental side of what has happened. Obviously, the physical traits of everything different. Mizzou Arena will look different tomorrow, I guarantee it. But the mental side of playing in a pandemic and how that affects someone like Konzo, I think, was a really interesting story.
And what's also interesting is the juxtaposition of, you know, Konzo, I mean, Coach Martin needing that break and needing that time just to refresh. But then he can do that because he has an experienced team returning back that understands how to play in his system, understand that they've been in these type of moments before. So I'm not saying it made his job, you know, remarkably easier, obviously, but, you know, it is, you know, less taxing to kind of move throughout this pandemic with a group of players who have been there. Like you said, they were returning over 80% of the minutes that they had a year ago. So it's interesting to see that reloaded mindset with that experienced mindset returning from the player side.
And I really thought it was interesting, as I saw today, as I've said before, I put on my ballot that Missouri's sixth in the conference. I believe the two other beat writers from Mizzou, who put them both seventh, actually, in the conference. And then you look at where they ended up in 10th, but with kind of averaging out to where the national expectations are, 10th, 11th, they're kind of where even some 12th to where Missouri could be. And then today, Joe Lunardi released his first in-season bracketology, and Missouri is the third team out. And so that means they are squarely on the bubble entering the season, and which means I think Joe Lunardi probably pays more attention. It's his job. Like, he is... I don't know what an equivalent in sports would be. I mean, he is Woj and Shams combined, free agency, time spent, one person. Is that fair, really? I mean, he is just his one job is looking at what makes a team qualify for the NCAA tournament. It's not even college basketball. It's the NCAA tournament. That's his job. And so he looked at probably the local expectations, the national expectations, and made them one, and they're an at-large team, and... You know, there you go. So I thought it was really interesting that no national recognition really came around for the Tigers. I'm like, someone's got to think they're as strong as the people locally do. And the first one came down with the big hammer of Joe Lunardi. So someone out there thinks they have talent, as Konzo said in the interview. He was very candid and said, well, someone out there doesn't think we have talent if, you know, the local guys are voting him 6-7, we ended up 10. So... there you go. Any other parting thoughts about basketball before we get into the football talk?
Just excited that we've made it here. Not we as Mizzou, but us as fans or as reporters. Just making it here, there's been so many questions like there were revolving around football. I know they've talked about, the NCAA has talked about, you know, kind of creating a bubble-like experience in Indianapolis for the NCAA tournament. You know, I'm a college basketball fan first, more than in football. So not having the tournament last year was devastating for me when, you know, there was a ton of other things going on, obviously. But I'm just excited and happy to tomorrow turn on my television and watch some college basketball.
Yeah, actually, my alma mater is playing in the first game of the college basketball season in Towson at Mohegan Sun, which is still up in the air if Missouri is going to be playing there in their multi-team event. And my final parting thought for basketball is, I was asked on the radio by George Young on Monday, what would be a successful season overall for college basketball? I said finishing it without any huge interruption. At the end of the day, crowning some sort of a legitimate champion. I don't think it's set in stone how the NCAA tournament's going to work, or everything is almost written in pencil. But if you have a point A and a point B, you did it. And I think that's kind of the same thing with football. And it looks like, as of right now, that everything might be up in the air with certain games, but there's no conjecture to challenge the college football playoff that will get there. So things are looking good there, I think. Same thing for basketball. Now going back into football, we expect this to be the battle line rivalry by Shelter Insurance Week. It's not. It's the Nashville versus Columbia matchup of Vanderbilt coming to Columbia to face Missouri. Same time, same network, everything. Just cases in Fayetteville went up, and they canceled postponed the Tennessee Vanderbilt game, and just in an effort, it sounds like, to play every team gets every game. There's more roads to that to happen if Vanderbilt does not play Tennessee this weekend and plays Missouri, as Missouri has been really at the forefront league-wide of canceled games. Really six things changed. I mean, it's going to be crazy. Missouri has a maximum of four now. Games that were played as scheduled originally in August 7th. And that's nuts. I mean, it really is. But now that Vanderbilt's coming here, they are 0-7. Missouri is 3-3. The last time we expected Vanderbilt to come to Columbia, we expected them, it was just going to be a whooping, really. I mean, Vanderbilt's offense hadn't gotten going. They scored 7 points against an LSU defense that gave up 45 to Missouri. And it was just so different. Now, while I don't think that the game necessarily will end up being all that close, I do think that it's a different type of matchup. This is not a guaranteed win for Missouri, kind of like we thought it would be 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, let's just be frank about it. Vanderbilt gave Florida a game for one quarter, and it is clear that those players, even though they may be undermanned due to COVID-19 or, you know, not have the talent of a UF, they went out and they played their hearts out for the first quarter for Derek Mason against the Gators. And, you know, this team, and we made the joke earlier that no matter what the line is, I'm picking the opposite team to cover against Vanderbilt. Well, I mean, I'm going against that this afternoon because I'm going to be picking Vanderbilt to cover -20.5 against Missouri. And I completely agree. It's a completely different outlook heading into this game than after the LSU game earlier this year.
So it's interesting enough you mentioned that spread, because we just got the push notification. It just went live on BetMGM, the odds, and it is different. It is 15.5. Would you still take Vanderbilt to cover at 15.5?
Oh, that changed.
I know. Yeah. BetMGM is the site I use. I couldn't find the line because of the change, so I went to FanDuel, and it was 20. It was 20.5. BetMGM came in today at 15.5 for Missouri with being a favorite, and I'll probably have to change that and get everybody's new picks. But
I think Vanderbilt still covers. You know, we haven't talked a lot about the South Carolina game, but didn't get that offensive explosion that you and I expected against a, you know, Gamecocks defense that had really struggled and was missing numerous amounts of starters. You know, you go up 17-0 getting into halftime, and then it's five straight punts to start the second half, and the offense really looked disjointed against a defense that, let's be clear, is not very good.
Yeah, and just thinking of it off the top of my head now, you don't think 5 points is a lot, but I felt pretty comfortable picking Vanderbilt 20.5. Now I am not comfortable at all picking them. I'd actually probably now lean Missouri, to be completely honest with you, because of just, I'm thinking of bad beats and how Vanderbilt's just going to give up at the end. And Missouri, that's where Missouri feasts. At the end of the day, you had Devin Dixon get that INT. I just think 17 was kind of the number I had settled on when looking at the picks, even though I said 10 to 13 in the interview you're going to hear with the Tennesseans Adam Sparks in a little bit. But I kind of settled that anywhere from the range of 10 to 17 was where I thought this game was going to end up. So now that there is some room for error either way here. So that's a good segue to, I spoke with the Nashville Tennesseans, Adam Sparks, also part of the USA Today Network for this week. Here's my interview with the Vanderbilt beat writer, Adam Sparks.
Joining the Mizzou Sports Podcast this time is the Vanderbilt football beat writer for the Nashville Tennesseans, Adam Sparks. How you doing, Adam?
Real good. Adjusting to yet another week during COVID, covering college football.
I think we're all there, and happy Thanksgiving to you. I guess 6.5 hours to the southwest of where I am in Columbia, Missouri. But, it's been an interesting year for sure. This game is supposed to take place originally, I think, in September on the original schedule. Then the revised schedule made it October 17th, and then it was moved to December. Now we're getting it Thanksgiving weekend. Oh, well. But first off, just kind of give us a broad update of this year's Vanderbilt team. A lot of people see 0-7, but I don't think that paints a full picture at all.
Offensively, this team has actually been pretty competitive, especially of late, the last, let's say, three games or so. Freshman quarterback Ken Seals started from day one, won a quarterback competition in the offseason. He's already broken Vandy's freshman passing record. Only seven games in. He's a guy that's, you know, he can throw for 300 a game. He's done that mostly lately. Offensive line lost basically almost the entire starting five from COVID opt-outs. They had to move some guys around just to field an offensive line. It's overperformed. Running back Keon Henry Brooks has been out with an injury, but I think he's going to be back this game. That's pretty important in this game because if you're relying just on the freshman quarterback, he may have some issues with a good running back, which he's been good the last few games when he's been healthy. Vandy has an offense that I think can put, 20, 30 points on Missouri if it doesn't turn the ball over. Defensively, it's been more of an issue. They've had a couple of good games defensively, more bad games than good. They've had a whole lot of opt-outs, a whole lot of transfers, even some guys that have had some season-ending injuries. They're just not in a good way roster-wise. I guess nobody is. But, I mean, just this week they lost one of their best players, linebacker Demetri Moore, entered the transfer portal. And that's, I think, 17, 18 players that they've lost since spring practice because of transfer, opt-out, or injuries. So it's a depleted roster, and they've lost mostly starters.
So that might be the difference between Missouri and Vanderbilt. Is Missouri is right at about that 16-17 number as well, but most of it was non-starters and a lot of the people we expected for fringe playing time. But anyway, it felt like when Vanderbilt was originally scheduled to come here in the middle of October that, the circles were kind of, the wagons were kind of circling, and Missouri had just put up 45 on LSU and Vanderbilt had only put up 7. And it seemed like this is an easy 2-2 Missouri, when Missouri's going to prove it to 2-2 before it went to Gainesville. Now it comes in at a completely different point in the season. Missouri's 3-3, Vanderbilt's 0-7. But it doesn't feel like to me that this is a guaranteed Missouri win at all. Although Missouri is favored, I think, on some points by 20 points, which I think is even a little too high. It feels like Vanderbilt could stretch this one out. And, I mean, I think the game for last year was further apart and Vanderbilt pulled off the upset. Do you think, similarly, that this game is not a shoo-in for Missouri at all?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, on this side of it, Vandy was pretty disappointed that they didn't get to play Tennessee this week. Obviously, that's a rival because they thought, hey, we're on the way up, getting better. Tennessee's on the way down. This is the time that, you can go and beat your rival. So Vandy felt like they're in one of their better spots this year, regardless of who they played. I do agree it's a little different matchup now than it would have been a month ago or so. Vandy actually has somewhat of an identity on offense. Defense is, who knows? They could give up, 40 in this game. They could give up 17. I have no idea. The offense seems like it can score, though. I mean, they put 35 on Kentucky, and Kentucky is a pretty good defense. They scored on their first two drives against Florida and really led Florida for most of the first half. And so this is an offense that I guess if Vandy's way to win this game or to have a chance at winning it is maybe get into a little bit of a shootout and maybe have a game similar to at least what the score showed at Kentucky. They lost that one 38-35. Give up a lot of points, but score a lot of points. Don't turn the ball over. I think that's doable for Vandy. Now, you know, Missouri has been a more disciplined team, I think a more consistent team this year. So that's why, obviously, I think Missouri should be and is favored because Vandy's been mostly cold and a little hot at times. When I look at Missouri, I see a team that at least knows more about what it wants to do. And Drinkwitz seems to at least have that program turn the right way.
And speaking of head coaches, it seems like it's a topic of conversation this time of year for a lot of different teams, Vandy being one of them. From what you've been able to gauge, how much of a hot seat is Derek Mason on? And if you look into a crystal ball, do you think he's Vanderbilt's head coach in about a month's time?
Well, that's tough to say. If this was not COVID year, I would say he's probably going to get fired. If you take into account all the stuff that, you know, they dealt with, postponement of games and the numbers as low as anybody in the conference the most opt-outs of anybody in the conference. If you take that and say this is somewhat of a mulligan year or an asterisk on this year, then he has a better chance than to stay than to be fired. But he was kind of on the warm seat coming into the year. I mean, there's also the big factor in either retaining or firing him is his buyout. Now, his buyout is nowhere near what you know other coaches are. Malzahn is like $21 million or something like that. Derek Mason, we don't know what his buyout is, but he's probably got 3, maybe 4 years left in his contract. So you can kind of figure in what that may be. It's a private school, so we don't know all his contract terms. We do know he has multiple years. He got a contract extension in February of 2019. So he's got some years left there. Vandy usually does not fire coaches with multiple years left on their contract. That being said, he's lost 11 straight SEC games. His record looks like he's a guy he would think would be fired. You know, the worse that this season gets, the longer that they go without a win, I think that the chances are increased, and certainly we'll know here probably in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
So it could be a Missouri win that pulls them from the abyss 2 straight years, in a sense.
You know, it could be. I mean, I think it's still being evaluated. I mean, the way that I think I looked at it is if the decision has not actually been made internally yet, then beating Tennessee this week may have done it. He actually has the best record against Tennessee of any Vandy coach in 100 years, since the 1920s. So that was going to be maybe what would save him. So, yeah, maybe if he beats Missouri and then, you know, can beat Tennessee before the decision is made, then maybe that saves him. I think that's kind of what he's clinging to. That and what I said about the, you know, 2020 doesn't entirely count, that sort of thing.
How do you actually see Saturday kind of playing out? I know for the USA Today Network, we picked the games against the spread. How do you kind of see Saturday playing out?
Boy, that's hard to say. I mean, I actually had not seen that early line yet. If the line is something like 20, then I think Missouri wins, but Vandy covers. Because I do think this will be a pretty close game. It would not shock me at all if Vanderbilt won, but I tend to go with what the odds show, and that would be Missouri. I think Missouri probably wins this game by about a touchdown. Vandy is also, even though they played Missouri close at times, this is a different coach, and Vandy has not necessarily got it done as much in Columbia as they have Nashville in the series. So, yeah, I think Missouri probably wins the same thing by about a touchdown.
And if I remember correctly, even going back to 2018, Drew Locke's senior year, was not Pat Shurmur. I think Kyle Shurmur was Vandy's quarterback at the time. Vandy was driving down the field and had a chance to win that game at the end, but Missouri ended up winning that game here in 18, and that was no slouch of a game as well. So just kind of now looking forward, I know that you cover the entire league, so I'm curious to ask this. How do you kind of see the rest of the entire league season playing out from just a COVID standpoint? I mean, do you think it's plausible that every game gets in, or is it going to have to be sacrificed, do you think? So a sacrifice is going to have to be made somewhere somehow.
Well, the effort is to get them all in. When you hear the conference say that we're okay playing regular season games on the same day as the SEC championship, that tells you that there's a really, really strong drive to get every game in. I think it's better chance than not that we get all the games in. But the problem is, you know, there's a whole lot of moving parts, and obviously Missouri is at the front of that, a lot of moving parts to try to figure out how to make the puzzle pieces all fit. And so I think that's going to be maybe the issue, that there's a willingness to get all the games in, but you may just run out of dates. If they're not in by December 19th, I think any games after that would be called. I don't think you're going to have a conference championship and then play a regular season game after that. So it's doable, but we can't have that many hiccups from this point forward.
Yeah, Missouri's schedule kind of looking forward is really the shrug emoji, if you think about it. I mean, they do have Mississippi State scheduled the next Saturday, but I think moving Mississippi State off that day would actually give the SEC more options as to getting all the games in, because they've always had some COVID issues and number issues down there in Starkville, too. Adam, I appreciate your time. Where can everybody find you reading the new opponent's perspective this week?
Online, Tennessean.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Adam Sparks.
All right, one final fun question for you, just because I have to get it in. I've been to Nashville a few times, obviously, since the beat started. Where does Adam Sparks rank on the Nashville hot chicken scale? Is there a place you like, or how does that all of that rank with you?
Hattie B's, Prince's is one that a lot of people go to, but Hattie B's is the one actually right next to the Tennessean office. I usually hit up that. And that being said, I mean mild chicken. I know we're supposed to eat hot chicken here. It's blasphemy to say mild, but I go with the mild chicken and stick more with the jalapeno mac and cheese more so than the chicken.
All right, well, that was Adam Sparks from the Nashville, Tennessee. And thank you so much, Adam, for joining us. And I guess I'll see you on Zoom on Saturday instead of in a press box here in Columbia. Thanks, man.
Yeah, good to be on.
We would like to thank our sponsors for the Mizzou Sports Podcast. University of Missouri Healthcare. University of Missouri Healthcare is proud to be the official sponsor of MU Athletics. Blue Events. Let Blue create your perfect event. Their passion for food, service, and presentation ensures that you will have a seamless and memorable event, no matter the size. They will work with you to bring your vision to life. Phyllis Nichols, State Farm Insurance. There when things go wrong, here to help life go right. And now back to our podcast.
And thank you once again to Adam Sparks for joining us on this hectic week. Thanks to me for both of us here. Actually, all three of us, if you include Langston, but... Follow Mizzou Football with the Tribune's Tiger Extra newsletter. Sign up at columbiatribune.com/TigerExtra for stories, galleries, and podcasts in your inbox every Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday. The Mizzou Sports Podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's, the home of handmade-to-order chicken, salads, and more than a dozen mild-to-wild sauces. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today. And the Columbia location of Zaxby's is...
Yeah, I think it's 100 Sugar Hill Lane.
I don't know. Cinnamon Hill
Lane. Cinnamon Hill. Cinnamon not Hill. Sugar Hill. It's
sugar,
Cinnamon Hill.
Brown Sugar Lane for Zaxby's. I haven't eaten at Zaxby's in a little while, but I need to go by after Thanksgiving.
I actually went... I went and got wings from Zaxby's before Thursday Night Football, and it's funny. I always tell myself before the pod, remember where it is, remember where it is. Because it's so close to my house, I don't even have to GPS it. So,
yeah. Anyway, but while we're on the topic of food, what is your ideal Thanksgiving meal, Langston? Do you go turkey, ham? So I know some people even do like rotisserie chicken because they don't like dry meat turkey.
My mom usually grills lamb chops for Thanksgiving. I'm a turkey guy, though. For most families probably don't do lamb, but turkey, any cut, white meat, dark meat, doesn't matter. Cranberry sauce has to be mac and cheese at dinner. If I go to your home and there's no mac and cheese during Thanksgiving, my heart's broken. Not really a big green bean casserole guy. Needs to be some yams and heavy on the cranberry sauce. That's just a must. I absolutely love cranberry sauce. How about yourself?
You didn't say stuffing.
I'm more focused on the mac and cheese than the stuffing.
Okay, so yeah, I'm okay with. I'm not a huge ham as a main dish guy. I like it like ham and cheese, chicken cordon bleu. Ham by itself, not so much. So I do like the dark meat of the turkey. I actually don't mind chicken too. I know some people do that. Lamb chops, I've never had. That sounds great. Stuffing, I am a big mashed potato guy. Both sweet potato yams or some mashed potatoes. Cranberry sauce is all right. I mean, I do have it. It's not like I do focus on the mac and cheese, but I don't need to cover everything in cranberry sauce. And then dessert wise, where are you at?
I don't really eat a lot of dessert. So I want more carbs. So I'll take some potatoes.
Mac and cheese for dessert.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. The more meat, more carbs. I don't really need the sweets.
Because Eli Drinkwitz said he was a pecan pie guy, and I don't I'm not a big fan with nuts and desserts. Not a big fan of that at all.
If I had to go pie, it would definitely be pumpkin, but I mean pecan's not bad.
I'd go pumpkin and sweet potato are kind of 1-2 for me. If you get some Patti LaBelle sweet potato pie, that'd be great. But actually, getting back to football now, we mentioned Eli Drinkwitz. It's not thought in the same way it was last week that Mizzou might have, you know, we might be going to South Carolina for nothing. They got enough players out of quarantine where there are enough players there where a threshold might happen. They're still low. They're still, they submitted 59 to the SEC, and that included the likes of a Larry Borum, a Xavier Delgado, a Trajan Jeffcoat, who all missed the game on Saturday, a Coby Whiteside, who's questionable. So they're still right around the threshold. But based on what you saw, we'll talk about the South Carolina game. Based on what you saw on Saturday, how does a pandemic Tiger team still figure things out? And do you think that they're reaching their potential now, or is it just doing the best what they got?
Offensively, you saw the rust. I mean, they hadn't played since Thanksgiving, and so that was clear and apparent. And
Halloween.
Yeah, not Thanksgiving. See, just thinking about the food. Hadn't played since Halloween, and, you know, that showed. And we talked about it a little bit earlier about how the expectations have changed since the LSU game, just because the large amount of breaks that this team has had and large amount of changes. And you talked about, you know, the possibility of only 4 games going on as scheduled back in August. It's, you know, it's a completely different season. And I hate to say that, but it truly is. As you go week to week with COVID-19 and the different players that could be out due to that. Defensively, though, it's starting to really, really show that defensively this team can kind of really hang with anyone. Holding South Carolina to 10 points under 300 yards, it was really impressive. And then also you have that game-winning interception from Devin Nicholson. I mean, we can go on and on. Nick Bolton, 14 tackles, and that game was all over the field. It was really, really nice to see when the offense wasn't clicking, the defense was able to step up and win this game.
For sure. I think that one of my biggest takeaways from the game was Nick Bolton's going to make somebody really happy next year. He has 2 years of eligibility left should he want it. He's not coming back. He's going to go in the first 2 rounds. I think he's a first-round guy, to be honest with you, but I can see him slipping into the beginning of the second round with some, you know, like a Lamar Jackson who was taking 32nd overall in his draft class. Just teams jumping back in. And so you look at that, and it's just, he is just all over the place. He is just a Sunday player playing on Saturdays right now, no doubt about it. You see those guys, and you just know it. Even at that, I think that there's just so much going on with Mizzou's offense moving piece-wise to where you see 17 points, and obviously what they did in the second half wasn't all that great. But I think with the rust, and there probably wasn't a better opponent to do it against than South Carolina, who that was probably the furthest apart 17-10 game I've ever seen.
Yep.
To be completely honest with you, I mean, work out all the kinks and go forward, and that's what makes, I think, the 15.5 spread so interesting. Is, you know, Missouri might still have some rust. You know, there's no doubt it takes when you stop for 3 weeks in the middle of a pandemic. You can practice all you want, but until you face other people, you don't get that kind of experience. And so, is there rust still there? We don't know. Is Vanderbilt trending in the right direction at 0-7? As weird as it is to say, yes. So, it's a weird dichotomy there for Mizzou football right now, but I do think they'll win. I mean, as you heard me ask Adam, I said, you know, how much of a hot seat is Derek Mason on? And I think he answered it really well, but it was going to be interesting is that I really did think it was going to be a loser leaves town match if it was Tennessee versus Vanderbilt this week, where if Tennessee loses to Vanderbilt, Jeremy Pruitt's getting fired at 6 straight losses, and then Vanderbilt trending in the right direction. If they still can't do enough to beat Tennessee in a year where they're the way they are, it might be bad news for Derek Mason, because his buyout, we really don't know, because Vanderbilt's the only private school in the SEC. But from any information that Adam had gotten, his buyout's not where, like, it's like Gus Malzahn, I think, has a $21 million buyout. Jeremy Pruitt's $13 million. Will Muschamp was $13.5 million. I mean, Derek Mason's not that high. So we will see. Vanderbilt's final two opponents, I believe, are Georgia and Tennessee. Duh. So Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Nashville, see if they get somebody, because it looks like that a win over Mizzou 2 years in a row would pull Derek Mason out of the coaching abyss.
Yeah, and, you know, I agree with you that from a certain perspective, like, I do believe that Missouri will win this game. The 15.5 line is juicy. But one thing I will say about
like
that.
Like the chicken is actually juicy.
There we go. No. But one thing I will say, and I mentioned earlier in the pod, it's clear that these players haven't given up on Derek Mason. So regardless if he's fired or not, you know, an 0-7 season with everything that Vanderbilt's kind of been through and the lack of talent they have, I don't think it's a major disappointment of season. Obviously, you don't want to go winless in the SEC, but when you put everything into context, I do think he's doing a good job coaching there, and regardless if he's fired or not, I mean, I think he should be commended on the way this team is continuing to fight.
Just like the example we used last week of Steve Spurrier at South Carolina, I think that what James Franklin did at Vanderbilt set expectations too high for that program, mm-hmm. especially because of what they did now. I mean, you go to Penn State from the SEC school for a reason, or that Vanderbilt type of SEC school for a reason. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting game, and it'll probably be 8 days before another podcast, and I believe it'll be Mississippi State game week the next time we come to you. They play the Egg Bowl this week, and which would be Mike Leach versus Lane Kiffin, which will be a really interesting game to cover for those doing it and to watch, but probably from the press box. But any other parting thoughts, Langston, before we let the people deal with whatever they're doing in podcast land?
You know, if you listen to this before the Mizzou game, I would say please enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday, whether you're staying at home to prevent the spread of the coronavirus to your family, or whether you've quarantined for 2 weeks or tried your best to socially distance for 2 weeks when you're going home. You know, please enjoy this time, call your loved ones, and, you know, I know it's been a very, very tough year, but these are the holidays, and this is for time for, to be thankful for what we do have. So I hope everyone takes the time to do that over the next few days.
All right, for Langston Newsome, I've been Eric Blum. Thanks for listening to this Mizzou Sports Podcast. We will see you next week.